Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 266. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Gymaware, for sponsoring this episode and bringing it to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and they are phenomenal people and make a great product. So if you're in the market, please check them out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Ted Perlack. He's the associate AD head strength coach at the University of Delaware, known for several years through the business and just does a fantastic job everywhere he's been. I appreciate you being on the show, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me.
Ted, you've been a bunch of places like me, man. You've been, you're at Delaware. Obviously, you've been at Elon, Fordham, Iona, St. Joseph's. You did an internship at the USOC. I think you did grad work. Where'd you do your grad work at?
Temple.
At Temple, that's right. Yep. You've been all those different places. You know, which specific place did you feel like you really kind of came to your own? The person you are today, where did you really kind of find your identity as a coach?
Ah, man, it's tough. I would say Fordham, I had the longest time to grow because I was there for almost 10 years. You know what I mean? So that's probably the place where I look back and I'm like, man, I can't believe I did half that stuff. You know, and then you look at some other stuff you did that's good that you do right now. And I think I really probably grew up there. You know, I kind of had like a lucky and a cursed road where I was only an assistant for a very short amount of time over the last 16 years. So a lot of my contacts are sport coaches, you know what I mean? And a lot of my decisions were kind of like mine,
right?
I just had to roll the dice on it. So you get to learn a lot. But I'd say professionally, honestly, the last 4 years at Delaware has probably made the biggest kind of shift in what I've been doing where, you know, it was one of those things where we moved, we had a kid finally, you know what I mean? So
right. Your
life kind of changes at that point, all around mentality, everything. And I kind of started thinking, you know, long-term, I want to be in athletics. You know, what's my best path? So I kind of really started hitting it hard with our administration to try to get more administrative roles and kind of evolve that way. And, you know, how could I be in this field when I'm 60 was kind of my thought. And, you know, I'm kind of taking baby steps to that now.
Yeah, I mean, we've walked a very similar path. And I was at South Florida for 10 years. That's where I feel like I really kind of grew up just because I was there for so long and was a head strength coach at 22 years old. So, I mean, it's tough when I tell people all the time that I don't think you really understand this job until you're a head strength coach because you're having to figure out culture and hiring and firing and all those things that really kind of make the job the job. And people don't realize that when you get an opportunity young, you lose out on a lot of that mentorship
that
you can see as an assistant, you know. And so you're having to reach out to other leaders, you know, be it sport coaches, be it other strength coaches to kind of lean on. I mean, you're going to make lots of mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you made as a coach and how you learned from it?
You know, I think probably the biggest mistake I made early was not asking enough questions to sport coaches. You know, and I think a lot of that was when you're young and, you know, the same deal. Like I was a head guy when I was 25. So my whole thought was, I don't want to show that I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, so at that point, I didn't ask a ton of questions. I tried to learn it on my own. I tried to bounce ideas off other people. And a lot of times you figure out that like you're over here and they're over there. When in reality, you ask one question, it's so easy. You know,
right.
And that's kind of really just all I do now is, you know, we don't even try to program at all until we, you know the group of kids we have from like an injury standpoint, training age standpoint, personality standpoint, you know. Once until we know the coach's goals and we can set the KPIs off their goals, you know, we don't even look at a program because it's like, you know, and that's kind of, I think, a big deal is where, you know, if you just ask a simple question and make people feel involved, you know, everyone's guard goes down, you know, and I just have the opposite feeling that if I ask a question and say, hey, coach, what do you want to do conditioning wise or what do you think about this or even a sport I didn't know a ton about, they were going to think, oh man, this guy's young. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
And I was so wrong with that. You know, so I think you ask that question, man, and people are on your side right away because they don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
It comes down to it. So exactly. That's, I think, my biggest mistake.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I had a coach tell me one time that, you know, you want me to love you, then love my kids. You know, and as long as you show that you care about the kids,
yeah.
You know, then being vulnerable and letting them know, hey, man, I was a freaking college football player. I don't know crap about tennis. I don't know crap about, you know, pole vault. You know, I need you to teach me, but, I went to school for this. I'm going to love your kids, and we're going to work together. We're going to come up with the best plan. You know, and all that, you know, those coaches will let their guards down really quick, and they'll want you to succeed because, at the end of the day, they're stuck with you one way or another, you know?
Exactly. And I think going on that too, man, then they have some definite contributions to the program.
Yeah.
And that's all every coach wants.
Right.
You know, they don't want to write the program. You know, so many strength coaches are scared they're going to get micromanaged.
Right.
I find that you never get micromanaged unless it's like retroactively and something goes wrong.
Right.
If you're proactive with it, you're trying to see around the corner and you sit down with that track coach and say, you know, hey, you know, I know how to train your kids energy system wise, athletic based, like we can screen them, but what do you need differently from, like you said, your pole vaulters to your hurdlers?
Right.
I kind of throw that out to you. You know, they can't come back to you now with the, you know, the complaint, the question, you know, why are we all doing the same stuff? You know,
right.
Don't do the same stuff because they're like, at the end of the day, just get my kids better.
But right.
That's the one thing where, you know, the more you involve people, and it's just any business, the more people are willing to work with you, you know?
Yeah, that, you know, that there's something to be said for that 23 to 30-year-old strength coach. Is, you know, sometimes it's not a bad thing for you to be micromanaged, to learn from some of these people that have been in the business for a while. And, you know, when I was at South Florida, 23 to 33, I got to a point where I did probably 80% of what I wanted to do with the football program, you know. Took 10 years to do that.
Yeah.
You know? But I became a much better coach because that head coach was on me nonstop and made me a better coach. And I attribute most of any success that I've had to working under him.
Yeah, it's huge.
You know, when you run a department, you know, one of the things that was always the toughest thing for me is you hire talented coaches, you hire type A personalities, because that's typically what we get in this profession, all those types of things. And you say, you know, you're run ragged as a coach. I mean, you're 12, 16-hour days. You don't have time to necessarily micromanage or you know, look over every program or things along those lines. How do you keep – I mean, you guys have 8 coaches up there. How do you keep the consistency – for the program throughout, you know, when you got all this coaches input, your input, the individual strength coaches input going in?
So we got a pretty unique situation here. We do monthly meetings with every sport program from a performance standpoint. So that's one of my main, I would say it's probably my main job in my new role. And we call them care meetings. So it's anyone who pretty much cares for the kids.
Right.
So, you know, the first goal of that whole thing was to get everyone on the same page. The second goal, honestly, was to have a meeting with that head coach of the program that they weren't calling. So it wasn't a time where that coach was getting everyone in the same room because something went wrong. And it wasn't just an intro meeting saying, hey, this is, you know, the environment I want you guys to set. This is my culture. Here's my rules. So at those meetings, we have, you know, I'll proctor them. It's the strength coach for the team, the athletic trainer for the team, our sports nutritionist, our sports psych, and our equipment person, because they're under like our performance umbrella.
Right.
And we, you know, I have basically a meeting a day because we have about 20 teams. Everyone else just has one per team they run with.
Right.
The sport coach has one a month. And in that meeting, that's it. I mean, we go in there and we go top to bottom. Hey, coach, you know, what's your practice plan looking like this month? Any key dates we got to monitor? Any dates you might cancel? Any dates where you're going to really be hard on these kids or make it a tough day that we got to look at? You know, any suggestions for any of us? And then we go to the ATs, you know, hey, well, how's our injury report looking? How's our trends for injuries? You know, when's our treatment time going to be, our rehabs? And then we go to the strength part, which obviously, even though I'm comfortable with all those areas, that's easier for me to run, you know what I mean? Because it's my background. And we just set up, you know, hey, what are our goals for the month? We let the coach say it, you know what I mean? All right, cool. Here's the method we're going to get there. Here's our key physical indicators. And that was a big part for my staff was, how many times have you seen you ask the coach what their goals are, and then you still train them, and they might have said, I need my team to be super strong, and you get to the end of the month, and they're like, we're not in good enough shape.
Right.
Of course we're not in good enough shape. Man, he told us we needed to be strong. We weren't running as much. So now we kind of all agree on what we're doing that month. And if our goal is conditioning, you know, we might not have a KPI of like a 3-rep max in front squat.
Right.
And then we kind of go through, you know, the rest of that portion of the strength as far as, you know, do we have to change any volume? And everyone just kind of talks so everyone has a piece of it. You know, sure. That's also a great time for my coaches to really get to know the athletic trainers and learn about like modifying workouts. Because as you know, man, you've been doing this for almost 20 years. Like, you have to be a great modifier now before you almost have to be a great programmer.
Right.
It's crazy, right? Like, you might have a team of 100 football guys and you want to have the best Olympic lifting program in the world. And you got 22 guys that for whatever reason can't catch a clean.
Exactly. You
know? But they still got to get powerful, you know? So you might have a different indicator or whatever it is. And I think that's big for coaches to kind of learn. And then, you know, our nutritionist has a good piece in that as far as what kind of food we're putting in the fueling station. Are they going to plan meals on the road? Are they going to help with pre-practice fueling or hydration? And our sports psych is really there because that's a different entity where we can't really talk about it, but we can refer kids and
right.
have some good team talks. You know, and then lastly, the equipment guys, we always let them go first so they can get out. They actually have a bigger piece of it than they think because you do get a lot of questions, especially with footwear.
Right.
That's been an injury we found has been pretty prevalent over the last like 3-4 years is, you know, just lower limb injuries. So they can give some input on that and budgets. And, you know, we try to keep those to about an hour, but everyone kind of leaves being on the same page, you know. And then from there, like my staff now knows that I'm fairly direct with them on like a day-to-day basis. So they don't have to worry about, you know, am I going to kind of beat around the bush with it? Because we just have a good relationship, but we really only have really 4 things that we kind of evaluate them on. And it's pretty simple. And I stole a lot of it from Tim Caron, who yeah. Was in the Army, you know, and it's like, you know, your team's showing up on time and wearing the right stuff, you know? And the big thing with that, which Tim said was like, you know, it just shows respect for the program, you know? And, that's one thing that we always try to make sure, like make sure the kids are on time, make sure the kids are wearing what we tell them the rest of the day. Like that number one, you got to do. Like we don't want to, if we want to throw up a video on social media and you guys want to get your stuff out there for a job 2 years down the line, nothing looks worse than a bunch of kids wearing different stuff, man.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just true. It's true.
Yeah.
Number two is like, are we having unified technique? So if basketball squatting, volleyball squatting, field hockey squatting, you name it. Like, are we uniform across the board? Like, we can't have one coach being a stickler for technique and another coach being a disaster.
Right. You
know? The third part is really just what metric are we picking and how are we going to show progress? So we do a baseline testing protocol here where our first day, and this kind of works how we acclimate kids back in, but our first day we do like our basic measurements and a screen. So it used to be the FMS. We were lucky enough to just buy Sparta Science.
Yeah.
So now we're hitting up Sparta on that. So that's really day one. Day two, and this is really the only thing I kind of streamline across the department, is we do a broad, a vert, 20-yard dash and a laser, a basic agility drill. It's really just a 60-yard shuttle that we kind of altered a little bit. And whatever conditioning test or method that coach wants.
Yeah.
And then the third day, we basically do our strength testing, which would be an upper body push, lower body pull. I mean, a lower body push and an upper body pull. And I let the coaches have freedom in that because, again, you know, stepping back now and not having to deal with as many teams, I realize, man, I can't have our women's soccer team doing a 3-rep max on bench.
Right.
So can't even bench. You know, do they get more out of doing a rep test with push-ups?
Sure.
I let the head coach and the strength coach figure out that metric and we just run with it. So we have some teams that safety bar squat, front squat, hex bar deadlift, back squat. As long as the strength coach and the sport coach are in tuned, you know, that's our metric. Just show some progress in it, man. And then, you know, pick the KPIs that are based off of that. And, you know, I found that in itself has helped out big time because you've had it where you get a new coach and they're like, we are not hand cleaning.
Right.
And you don't even, you're like, why?
Yeah.
But you don't even want to get in that argument because I just tell my coaches now, all right, whatever, man.
Yep.
We got maxes. We got med balls. We'll just test broad and vert. Like, you're off the hook with teaching cleans to a bunch of kids who don't want to do it, you know?
Yep. So
that's kind of helped us with that. And then really the last thing we communicate on or evaluate on is just like, are you communicating with the people you're working with? So it's fairly easy on our end is just, you know, make sure the kids show up and are respectful, make sure we get good technique, show progress and however you and that sport coach see fit. And then like, you got to communicate with people. Like it can't just be the once a month we're all in that room, you know, because the other thing that I found, it drives me crazy, but I get it's the way the world's going is, student athletes have so much more say now than they ever did.
Oh yeah.
With SAC, with all these different programs. And I think it's toxic because it's all anonymous.
Right.
It could also help you out if they're on your side.
Yep.
You know? So like that's a whole nother conversation if that's the right direction to have 18 and 20 year olds making opinions on people with their master's degrees.
Yeah, right.
Still, I mean, if you communicate, man, I think you're in pretty good shape.
I agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. I think some things not to skip over there was having, you know, consistency in the program with technique, I think is paramount, you know. And I mean, whether or not this team trains twice a week, this trains three times a week, this team four times a week, you know, as long as you have some unified technique and you have a plan, I think that's ultimately, you know, because so much of it's dictated by game schedule, practice schedule, yeah, modifications, all those types of things. And you're right. I think so a great takeaway for these young coaches that are listening is that you have to have a big toolbox. You have to, I mean, you have to be based on principles. Your program has to be based on principles, but then, you know, you don't want to be the kind of guy where you're a power lifter and somebody comes in and says, you can't do a deadlift anymore. And you can physically see the steam coming out of the ears, you know, it's okay. We can find another way to do a multiple joint lower body movement, you know? But I think that's an important piece. When it comes to your staff development, you know, in terms of trying to get them better as coaches, you know, what are some things that you're doing within the department to do that?
You know, that's a thing that I think we got to always work on, man. It's like we try to go to talks, we try to go to clinics. You know, we try to never have one coach on the floor by themselves if we can. So you get a younger coach kind of paired up with an older coach and kind of learning their programming. The one thing UD does that's really unique since we've got a new administration is we do a ton of like outside of the box professional development that's mandated by our administration, which no one wants to do when you get the email.
Yeah, but
when you get in that room, it's like an awesome 2 hours.
Yeah, sure.
So we had Tim Furlong come talk to us about team building. That guy's awesome, man. He was great. We did everyone had to do like a personality profile. And then kind of like get in that room and discuss like different people, different way to talk to them, you know, and it's funny because like you look at it and you see your profile and then your staff sees it and they're like laughing because they're like, that's spot on, you know, and everyone can kind of do that with each other. So just like different little things like that we did that, you know, was really outside of your job, you know, and I thought that helps these guys more than anything is you can ever get someone in and do true like leadership training or like really like social cueing.
Right.
I think it's huge, you know, because I think too many times coaches think like, I just got to find out what the best program is. I got to find out how to use Prelpin's chart, right? I got to find out how to do 5-3-1. And it's like, yeah, you kind of do. But in reality, you got to just get the kids to want to do whatever you're doing.
Right.
You know, and you got to get the coaches to believe in you and you got to be confident enough to get your next job, you know, and I think that's almost more important than, you know, learning just about pure strength and conditioning. The one thing I will say, man, is I do think young coaches, and I was fortunate enough to have a pretty good background on this, they gotta learn running more.
Yeah.
They gotta learn movement. They gotta learn energy system training. They gotta learn, you know, proper running mechanics. I got to see Brian Miller speak about sprinting the other couple weeks ago. We spoke in the same clinic and, you know, just that by itself for my staff when we brought him, you know, him and there was a sports psych guy that talked, they were the two, it was worth the price of admission right there. I mean,
yeah,
those things, I think coaches, the lifting is so easy and there's so much stuff on it.
Right.
The running stuff, man, that makes or breaks you as a coach nowadays.
I agree.
Right. I mean, and you know, like we all, anyone can get stronger. You know what I mean? Anyone can get stronger. But at the end of the day,
it's not rocket science.
Yeah, no one's sitting there saying, hey, in the last 2 minutes of the game, we got to be the strongest freaking team in the world.
Right.
They're like, we got to be in the best shape. We got to move the best. We got to have the most guys available. And I think that comes down to, like, your movement and running program.
Yeah.
I'm still learning on it, man. I don't even know the right questions to ask, let alone the answer. You know, but I think that's what you got to learn. I think that's kind of like the way it's evolving, and that can really make you succeed as a coach.
I agree. You know, you talked a little bit about how you acclimate or how you have consistency with the testing, within your program. You know, this time of year when you got a bunch of people coming on campus new, what are you doing to kind of get them into the program, get them, you know, topped off on what, you know, they should be doing, showing up on time and all those types of things, but then getting actually prepared to handle the rigors of whatever you throw at them? Yeah.
So that is one of our big things too, that is like, you know, there's not a lot of stuff that I'd say is like really like put in place that we have to do for me, but that's one of them is we have that kind of baseline testing protocol, you know, so screening measurements day one, all the movement tests day two. And, you know, a big part of that is just non-disclosed injuries. So
right.
If you get there day two and you got a bunch of kids who can't jump and can't land it, can't sprint and slow down and can't cut, I mean, you're in trouble right in your program.
Yeah. You
know? And right off the bat, like that's all out there and the coaches know and the athletic trainers know, and we kind of nip in the bud. The other part that I thought about that was good was we kind of took out the whole recruiting aspect where a coach was like, I got this kid and he runs a blank. All right, great. Now we have a bunch of non-skilled tests day one, and we can actually compare our freshmen to our sophomores, to our juniors, to our seniors. And you know what? At the end of the day, if the kid doesn't run a 4.4, it doesn't matter because we got him anyway. But
right.
At least you all know that you're not going to have a situation 6 months from now where, you know, they're talking about why we made that kid slower.
Right, yeah, sure.
And then from the lifting part of it, we kind of just build our testing into that third day where we don't take the approach of when you guys go home for the summer, you got to come back and beat your max. We say you got to be within 10% of it. So we're just building in within that workout like a, you know, however your rep scheme is. It could be a 90 for one. It could be an 85 for three. It could be an 80 for five, whatever it is on that relative intensity chart. And then the new kids, we just have them in the first level of our regression. And they don't even max. They just kind of learn those movements. So, you know, I always, you know, I was definitely guilty of having kids come back, have them get, you know, weaker in theory and be like, these kids didn't do anything over the summer.
Right.
And then it all dawned on me, like, if I can send these kids home with a packet and they come back stronger, why do they even need a strength coach?
True.
How delusional was I to think they were going to come back stronger? So now I don't pull my hair out, whatever I got left of it, by saying, all right, if you left squatting 300, if you can come back squatting around 270, like we're in good shape now.
Right.
We can make up that 10% within 2 weeks. You know, just from the stresses we're going to put on you, the increased work capacity, being in a structured program,
right.
You know, I now have a grasp on it that these kids aren't going to go home and do exactly what you tell them. And I think that's one of the things we do. So that whole first week is really just building our program for the next 4 or 5 weeks, letting the athletic trainers know where our kids are at from a health standpoint, from what they might not have told them, and then letting the coaches know, like, hey, here's where we are day one.
Yeah.
Have it real time. You know, ideally for us, the kids are in okay shape, but if they're not, it almost helps us because we're going to show more progress anyway.
Right.
You would hope if you have a intelligent conditioning test where my staff could break through to the coaches where, like, let's just have it be the minimal effective dose to start practice. Like,
sure.
Let's come back and run 31 tens.
Right.
Let's come back and run 6 150 shuttles. You know, something much easier where if we were running, you know, 10 of those before we left, let's run 7 when we come back and see where the kids are at.
Right.
And just building in like a program, you know, so we can create a good foundation. Because, you know, the one thing that terrifies me, like everybody, is you don't want to have that situation where a bunch of kids come back and 5 kids blow a hamstring the first day and, you know, kids are standing their peck and you just lose all that training time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of something we put in to just, you know, truly acclimate them back and get people back in the swing of things and get a grasp on how we can build our program. And then you can sit down with the coach and say, hey, listen, I know you wanted to get this team stronger. But listen, we came back and we're not in great shape. We might want to take 3-4 weeks and get a better foundation, run some GPP stuff, get in shape, and then we can hit up the strength stuff. And you can at least have that conversation with some data, and the coaches will probably be appreciative to you because it's like, wow, you're thinking about the health of my kids.
Right.
You hope they care about. Now, listen, a coach might say, no, I don't care. These kids are lazy. And then you got to manage it.
Yeah, but sure.
At least that point you got, you know, you kind of got it on the table.
A little bit easier to fight that battle when you're going up the chain too. You're trying to watch out for health and the other one's not, you know.
Exactly.
Well, man, we end the show with a couple of resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, man, I would say the best piece of coaching advice I ever got was super young. I'm at Temple, and it's not even as much coaching, but it was state of mind that it definitely made me think about it. We were in a staff meeting, and everyone's complaining, you know what I mean? Not strength staff, athletic.
Yeah.
John Chaney was still a basketball coach, and he stood up, and he was like, guys, every school has problems. You just don't want to be at the place that has all of them, you know? And he's like, if you look at it negatively, it's going to bury you. Just find the one positive thing and run with it. And that was kind of like something that I think was the best piece of advice where, you know, you got to look at your day kind of like a golf game in some senses where, like, if you dwell on the one bad thing that went wrong, you're buried. If you had a bad day and you can walk out of there and be like, man, that was nuts, but you know what? This was great today. You got a shot to build on it. And I just think, man, it's all mental, like, as a coach. Like, so much stuff goes right. So much stuff goes wrong. If you're looking at it the wrong way, I mean, you got no shot. You know, this is like – it's like an ultra marathon. Like – you could have the best program in the world and your team can go 1-10.
Yep. You
know, you could run the worst program in the world and, you know, next thing you know, you're sitting there in an NCAA tournament for basketball and you're like, how the hell did we get here? Right? So at the end of the day, you're such a small piece of that puzzle.
No question. That,
but that piece is like, it's so important. Like, if you don't have that piece, the puzzle's ruined. So you gotta just kind of be level-headed. And I think if you're not, everyone sees it.
Yeah.
If you're the guy that goes in and you complain and you are always negative, your staff is going to be like that.
Nobody wants to work in that environment. You know, it's a toxic environment. Everybody's looking then, you know.
I do think you do need to have an environment where, like, you have your staff and they know that when you shut the door in the office, like, if something goes wrong, you can vent to us.
Right.
Talk about it. You're going to be fired up for 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, you're going to laugh at it and just kind of keep it in here. You know, like, I think your staff has to know that they can tell you about a problem and you're not going to go run to that sport coach or administrator and do that stuff. But I also think they got to know that, like, it can't always be that negative environment. And I think that's just from how you look at stuff. You know, one little thing buries people, man. And it's sad. It happened to me. It's happened to everybody.
I think what you said there is you have to reframe those situations, you know. Yeah. When somebody says, hey, man, we're only lifting one day a week and I'm pissed. I want to be lifting 2 days a week. You know, I always remind them, hey, you could be lifting no days a week, you know? You know, and if you just reframe it, you know, sometimes and that's what those meetings need to be. It's okay to vent.
Yep.
Somebody has to be there, like Chaney, to reframe it and say, I just don't want to be the one that has all the problems. You know, I love that.
It's crazy, right? And it's true, man. I mean, you look at everywhere you've worked, and you probably have the same issues, whether you were at, you know, starting a program at South Florida or at Tennessee, right? It doesn't matter the level you're at, man. The kids are the kids. The issues are the issues. The classes are the classes, right? It's just
– different logo. That's it.
Yeah.
Different logo. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Book, man. I mean, I've said – I would game for strength wise, you know, in the performance realm, Game Changer has been a book that I read that, you know, I kind of jumped around chapters. That's helped me a lot. I think that's a book with a lot of knowledge in it that kind of hits you on all different angles. Honestly, man, you know, from the other side of it, I read a lot of John Gordon stuff, yeah. You know, the Carpenter, the Energy Bus, you know, and I know it's kind of cliche. Everybody says they read them, but I think, you know, I actually have those on my phone on Books on Tape too. And I listen to those when I drive, and every time I listen to it, man, I feel like I'm pulling my phone out, putting stuff in my notes that I want to just remember. Yeah. So I think that's a guy where, you know, if you want to kind of step back and just get better as a person, that stuff helps a lot. App, you know, Pick, Play, Post is a pretty good app if you want to start putting stuff out there for videos. You know, it's pretty easy. It's like VidStitch, that type of deal.
Yeah.
And then I'm also like a guy who's pretty crazy with like a positivity stance. So I have like the secret app on my phone and I just read one of those a day and try to get back to the mindset of like stuff's going in the right direction. And then, you know, website, and my buddy Joe, like the Franco's training website, man, has a lot of gems in it. You know, I've known Joe for years now. I used to always work out at his gym and my brother-in-law worked out there. One of my assistants worked for him. You know, just such a great dude that gives you a lot of free content that's, it's simple, but it's well thought out. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, you know,
so yeah, I agree.
A good resource to have.
Yeah, Joe's awesome. And I would echo Game Changer. That's a fantastic book as well. And I don't know about the Secret app, but I'm going to definitely check that one out.
Oh, dude, it's awesome. It's awesome.
A book coming out in January that's all about the 5 minutes before or after the workout, about when you're talking to the team about, you know, using storytelling to teach them to be a better human. You know, so it's a collection of stories that strength coaches have used in that setting. But, I mean, I think, you know, finding that daily inspiration like that, be it listening to John Gordon or you know, a daily devotional. I mean, you know, I've got my daily devotional right here that I read every morning. I think you have to feed the brain that, you know, and every single time I find something like you do to pull out and talk to my players about, you know, each day. And I think that's so important as a leader.
You got it, man. I mean, the other thing too, that kind of like evolve on that is, you know, Rob Taylor does this and I kind of do it without even telling anyone we do it, but he has the whole, you know, ask, give, touch thing where, you know, when you're taking that 5 minutes before a lift where kids are rolling out, you know, walk around and either give every kid a pound or a high five, ask them how their day was, a test. You can talk about, you know, summertime, you know, baseball or whatever. You know, you just talk about what's going on in, like, their life, you know, if something crazy happened in the world. You know, it's a good time then to give them the instruction of what you're going to do in the lift too.
Right.
You know, I think it's just an easy way to get every kid to know that, like, you kind of care about them. Because the crazy thing that I found in this field, man, is you spend so much time on the kids that are like a problem in a way that you got to get to, right? And then you spend so much time on the kids that are like your best players.
Yeah.
You have these great kids in the middle that you just kind of like take for granted.
Yeah.
And that's something that like is, it kind of drives me crazy because, like, you know, that was me, dude. I wasn't like the best athlete in the world, you know, like I played college football for 4 years and played because I worked hard. You know, I was never a kid. I was no angel, but I wasn't, you know,
getting
kids in class and all that. And like, I had a coach who's now like our position coach, is the head coach at Yale now. And like, he always appreciated us. And I found that, you know, at times I would lose that where like you have kids that you're just like, thank God we got these kids at these racks. I don't gotta, I know they're going to do it right. I know they're going to follow their sheet. You know, I can put an intern with them. And then I think, like, that's a good time to even just tell them you appreciate them at the beginning. Yep. Like, you know, because, like, they're kind of like the rock that holds the whole thing together. And, you know, sometimes the middle gets lost in the shuffle because you got your stars, you know, you got your kids that you got to really spend a lot of time with because they're knuckleheads and you kind of got to – you forget about those guys. So something that I think, you know, just helps in general. You as a coach, too, just let them know that, you know, they're important and they matter.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely. You know, I always tell my coaches that, you know, we have 105 ugly babies, but there are ugly babies, you know. You got to love them all, just to say, right out there, the star, they're the – and that's the beauty. I think that's probably why a lot of us go into strength and conditioning, is so that you can have an impact on each player's life instead of just the players that you coach in your position group or just the kids that you recruit or whatever it may be. I think a lot of us were those self-made athletes that appreciated that place. But man, I appreciate you. I appreciate the way you go about your business. I mean, obviously run a great department. You've had a lot of success in the profession, but I mean, you continue to give back, you continue to evolve and provide, you know, opportunities for coaches and they're bettering it by going on and finding a place in athletic administration as well. As we try to grow this, and people forget it's a 70 year old profession. You know, it's not like law. It's thousands of years old or these other things. We're still trying to figure it all out. And for us to retire as those 60, 65 year old strength coaches at some point, we're going to have to grow it. You know, your guy does that.
Yeah. You got to do that. And I think even with that, man, it's like, you know, a question I feel from a lot of people on that is just, how do you get to those spots? And you kind of got to just roll the dice and bring it up. You know, you got, when you get a shot to meet with a new administrator, you got a shot to meet with your new AD and they ask you what your goals are, you know, just tell them the truth. You know what I mean? You might be in their plan. You might not be in their plan, but you never know. Like sometimes people don't even know that what you're bringing up is an option and could be a positive experience for the department until you kind of lay it out there and you're organized and you tell them about it.
Right.
Kind of just been the one, I guess, gift I've had as like a person is I'm not scared to put myself out there to people and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I want to do. You know, and you might hear no, what, 50 times?
Right.
Just once, man, if you just take advantage of it and run with it, like, you're in good shape. So, you know, right. You got to just have the self-confidence to put yourself out there, but be organized when you do it, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, man, for having me on.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.